Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now, mate, I'll tell you what the problem is. This country's on its bloody arse, yeah? We need someone that we're going to go to battle with, you know what I mean? Someone that other nations are going to look at and say, I'm not fucking with the Irish, yeah? Right. I haven't seen anyone yet.
And I promise to you today, to you, the Fine Gael Party, and to you, the people of Ireland, I will do my damnedest for the good of the party and, more importantly, for the good of Ireland. Let's take our flag back! Take it back! Take our flag back! Take it back! And a political process to bring about a two-state solution. Let Ireland be a force in the globe for that.
Come on!
I know the value of hard work. I feel the desperate need for hope right across every part of this country. And I promise to you...
And to anybody who thinks this party is tired, to anyone who thinks this party lacks energy, you ain't seen nothing yet.
For the good of
fucking yes.
I'm up for it. Are you? I'm ready, are you?
Welcome to Free State, everybody. We are continuing our deep dive into Ireland today. And you know, we're talking about the departure of Leo Varadkar and the appointment of Simon Harris as Taoiseach, which will happen when the Dáil returns from their Easter recess, which followed immediately from their St. Patrick's Day recess. I think people, again, that sense of being unaware of the public mood. You can almost see it in the fact that the Dáil isn't sitting for so long, if it actually really matters. And that's the thing we might look at. But there was one thing we were talking about in the last on Tuesday that I just wanted to come back to, which was the referendums and, you know, how significant they were. And one of the things that, like, I found the entire referendum campaign incredibly boring. And one of the things that struck me about always strikes me in these situations is, first of all, it reminds me of, like, when a horse wins at Cheltenham, there was always somebody who will give you every reason why this horse was going to win once they've won. And I'm looking at them going, where the fuck were you before the race when I needed you? You know, you're no good to me now telling me why this 16-1 shot was guaranteed a winner, was guaranteed to win. And everybody after the referendum could explain it in perfect terms, which why the referendums had been defeated, why they had lost. And it was, you know, it was always in terms, you never have somebody come on and say, you know, everything I've thought about things up until this point must be wrong, because I have a feeling that these people voted on a basis that I don't understand. It always corresponds to how they believed, how they felt about things at all stages up until that point anyway. And it makes sense because it is in keeping with what they think. The other thing I would say about these referendums, and you talked about it on Tuesday, Joe, about them being kind of trying to tap into that feel good, repeal and marriage equality.
It was sort of a classic sort of sentimental triumph for them.
There was a key difference between those two and this one, And I worked for joe.ie during calm the down. Repeal.
Calm down, Dion. Calm down.
Okay. Easy. There was a key. why am I need to calm down?
You sound agitated.
No, I'm not agitated. I'm just
there we go. Sometimes when you've got Dion, you know, you have to sort of assume hostage negotiator mode. It's like, Dion, what can I do for you? How's Aaron? Yeah, great. You look fantastic. I love that coat. Yeah. Do you want me to call out for a pizza for you? I'll call out for a pizza. Hey, what do you like? What do you like? Pepperoni.
You're showing how you're the horse whisperer.
See, the real problem, Dion.
No, let me finish this point, Joe, because I just want to say this, that the difference I feel between these referendums and those ones were that there was no real ask of people in these ones. There was people spoke very openly and bravely. And I was just saying, when I worked at Joe.e, we did a lot of videos around the repeal, talking to people whose lives, terrible, terrible stories that of people's lives who had been destroyed by the Eighth Amendment, and people whose wives had died because they couldn't get treatment. Various, horrible, horrible situations, people who had to travel for treatment, all these kind of things. And these people spoke with huge courage about what the Eighth Amendment had done to them. And there was understandable, and there's a very valid criticism of that being the type of media you have to use, or you use in a campaign like that. And the same thing, marriage equality was a similar thing about, we had a very simple understanding that, this was just inhumane to deny this simple human right to gay people. There was nothing like that for this.
This one was performative. There was nothing.
You weren't really feeling that you were, like, I understand, we take out the misogynistic language, but there was nothing really there that you felt you were going to change people's lives one way or another. And in that instance, it was just very easy to vote no.
It was a classic summary of Fine Gael, the current Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil government. Their idea was this would be a sentimental triumph, a feel-good win on the way to the next election, and it'll unite the nice people of Ireland against all those bad people. And, of course, all of this obscures what's really happening in Ireland as it's happening elsewhere. I mean, the biggest problem in the world, and I'll come back to Carrie Stevenson, whose episodes are stark, I think frightening, and I'm going to air next week. The guy, the trader who was on the trading floor that, as he describes it, blew up the world financial system and made hundreds of millions for themselves in the process. I mean, this week, for example, inequality is the problem. That's the real problem, and that's what's happening everywhere. And if you don't deal with inequality, then you start to get the discontent, and then you start, the dark pockets, start to get darker. People get angrier. And then they're taken advantage of. And we're seeing this at a low level at the moment in Ireland, but it's happening, no doubt. I mean, this week, the United States Treasury reported that there are now almost 800,000 people homeless in the richest country on earth. The Canadian National Post, a secret report from the RCMP, which is an inner sort of body inside government, warned this week that Canada may descend into, quote, serious civil unrest once citizens begin to realize the hopelessness of their economic situation. The acceleration and the decline in living standards that younger generations have already witnessed compared to earlier generations. Many Canadians under 35, this is a quote, are unlikely ever to be able to buy a place to live. The report, which is labeled secret and was leaked, obviously, to the National Post, is intended as a piece of special operational information to be distributed only to members of the parliament and among decision makers in the federal government. And the report highlights trends in Canada and abroad that are going to have a significant effect on stability in societies around the world. And this is what's happening in Ireland is happening elsewhere. You know, what these people, the grips and these evil forces, let's call them the John McGurks and people like that, you know, they're taking advantage of this. But it is a very standard problem and it comes from inequality. You know, warns of, quote, a future increasingly defined by unpredictable weather, seasonal catastrophes, increasing pressures to cede territory because of mass immigration, you know, increasing disillusionment with government, you know, which the authors have chalked up to, quote, misinformation, conspiracy theories, and paranoia, which abound, right? Law enforcement must expect continuing social and political polarization fueled by these misinformation campaigns and an increasing distrust for all democratic institutions. You know, I mean, and I note, for example, just before we started today, that guy, John McGurk, you know, and it gives me no pleasure to say this about anybody, a thoroughly nasty, opportunistic and hateful human being, making fun of a transgender person who had won a darts game and who, as I understand it, I'm assuming this must be his joke that is identifying now as a woman. Fair play to this lad, proving men might play second fiddle when it comes to choosing a good scented candle, but we're top of darts. Now, we say, okay, what a nasty human being, this gleeful hatred of other human beings, you know. And I say to our listeners, do not fall for these culture wars. Do some reading. This is an old story. Hitler used them in exactly the same way, designed to distract us from the real problems we face of inequality, health, climate change, funded by the billionaire classes to keep us busy with this sort of petty hatefulness. And just this week, you know, and we say all these things. But it's important to remember them. I mean, this is a culture war shared with extreme loyalism, Ulster loyalism in the North. I mean, Jim Allister, right, who's the sort of respectable face of that hate movement, he asked this question this week in Stormont. You know, you just think to yourself, like, you absolute cunt, right? How many libraries have specific sections in their book selection dedicated to trans children, transgender children and teenagers? And what is the reasoning behind this position? Question from the Member of Parliament, blah, 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 blah. I mean, and this is the same Jim Allister who steadfastly praised Davy Tweed as a great man, even after his convictions for violent paedophilia. But the point about it is, he's stirring people up and then taking advantage of that. Now, they'll vote for him because they say, well, there's a man speaking for us, these fucking immigrants, these fucking transgender people. I mean, I don't know if John McGurk and those people have ever met someone who's transgender, but as the Canadian government's internal report warns, as inequality increases because steps aren't being taken around the world to decrease it, to tax the wealthy, to tax wealth, to regulate the financial industry, which is completely out of control, to strengthen unions so that people feel they're getting a fair crack of the whip, a fair portion of the money that they're earning, that they're helping to sort of make for these very, very, very wealthy moguls, you know. And if you don't deal with the inequality, then people start to feel powerless. Because in truth, we've got very little choice now. I mean, our energy supply is dictated to us. We have to pay it or we don't. You know, bills are going up all the time. What do? Not pay them. You know, the bailiffs will arrive. You know, this is why we've got record homelessness in Ireland. In the UK this week, the Trestle report, child poverty is now 28%. 3.6 million children in poverty, one in four. You know, and then I see Netflix made over $15 billion in profits between 2018 and 2022. And their effective income tax rate paid was 1.6%. You know, and this division is an old trick played by the billionaire classes. Brilliant. They're talking about transgender. Fucking brilliant. How many transgender people do you know? And like, and you come from a very progressive background. You know, you're very, very liberal.
Very few.
Do you know one that you could pick up the phone and ring?
I probably know one.
One. There you go. You know. And yet you've got these people now, you know, peddling hate. They're out now. They're encouraging them to go out and burn hostels down and attack, you know, these vulnerable people who are here looking for sanctuary with their kids, and all of that suddenly evaporates when Leo is Taoiseach. Everything's fine. We mean the media and the establishment isn't going to go after him for any of these inequality problems. And Simon Harris then, who Stephen Collins of the Irish Times unblushingly described as the White Obama.
He didn't. Like, sometimes you have to admit, sometimes you get a little bit carried away, and I have to just put you on the spot and say, did that actually happen?
Do you want me to quote from the Irish Times columns that he wrote describing Simon Harris as, and I quote, the White Obama? And all that one can say is, what the actual fuck? And then, well, I don't know if you saw the RT puff pieces.
I did, yeah.
And you know, they had
practically brimming report with excitement.
It was done. The broadcast from Greystones, which was typical of the broadcasts over the last 5 or 6. I mean, it's all glowing, of course, because, you know, this is how RT operates. It's part of the establishment. We've talked about this before. And they sent a guy out, and it was a bit like, you know, your man Nicholas Witchell reporting on a royal wedding.
Well, Sharon, I think it's fair to say they are more than hopeful that Simon Harris will become the next Taoiseach. They are practically brimming with excitement here at the prospect of a local boy becoming the Taoiseach of Ireland.
And we're here now in Greystone, and I've just stopped. Someone with a double-barrel surname. And she says, well, I mean, we love Simon, you know, he's just a lovely young man. And, you know,
you've met him, what's he like? He said at one point.
That's right. He's the sort of young man, you know, that you would go to his house and ask him to borrow a cup of sugar, you know, just a lovely man. Anyway, they interviewed 4 people who all said, well, look, he's an amazing guy. And, you know, some guy said, now there was one person who I thought was down, who was downright rude. Absolutely outrageous. He said, well, I mean, I suppose, you know, politically, that you know, there perhaps might be some issue with the achievement column, but, you know, nobody's perfect, he said. And the RT interviewer finished off by saying, well, you know, the people here in Greystone seem to genuinely love him. And they loved him so much that he was elected on the 15th count at the last general election without making the quota.
Well, yeah, but that's a different point. That was because they ran 3 candidates in Fine Gael ran 3 candidates. I don't think I agree with you about that report, and it wasn't even just that. That was the whole fever. Like, this is the thing, and we talked about it on Tuesday. Like, I briefly had the fever as I walked by government buildings and I saw this, and you're caught up in a bit of excitement. But this fever, at no point, we talked about, you know, the $64 million question, who's going to succeed him. And I listened to an awful lot of stuff last week. And at no point, while the contest was in the balance, if you like, which wasn't for very long, at no point did anyone ever ask, what does Simon Harris stand for? What does he believe? What does he think? Is there a difference between him and Pascal Donoghue, who might be? And I, like, to be honest, I would say Pascal Donoghue at least has some sort of sense of, you actually feel there are, and I've interviewed him, and you feel there are a strong sense of political centrist beliefs that he believes in. And you may not like them, but they are there and they are well thought out. Simon Harris's entire career has been about reaching this position,
being there.
I was thinking,
you offend the fewest people possible. And I mean, I remember once a GA president was elected, not our current president at all, you know, who's a man of substance and a man of achievement throughout his life. I remember a GA president being elected some years ago, and the person who was his de facto election agent, I said, That is unbelievable. It was a landslide. It was the biggest victory in the history of TA presidential elections.
Hmm.
And I said to him, that's unbelievable. And he said, well, it's easy because he doesn't believe in anything. So, I mean, there was no way to attack him. He had never said anything. So it was perfect. And I mean, if you get into that sort of end of Kenny space in Fine Gael and you maintain good relationships with the right people and you're able to handle yourself publicly, well then, if you get the bit of luck and you've got the right connections, you have every chance. I mean, you look at Simon's career and you think to yourself, well, look, what has he achieved? I mean, one of the things that Simon did, of course, apart from embracing the landlord classes, which is an enormous problem. I mean, they had a very simple choice to make last year, and it was to ban no-fault evictions. So where it's no fault of the tenants are paying their rent, they're good tenants, there are no problems with the tenancy agreement, that in this period of great precariousness for people and their families, we're now going to impose a ban, right, on no-fault evictions. And Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil unanimously voted to end that ban. And there was another opportunity, they had a second opportunity to do it. And then the cruelty of that was seen in countless videos all over Ireland, where people were being basically thrown out onto the street with their belongings. And in many, many cases, with nowhere to go, because there was nowhere to go to afford the rent. Often these people were being evicted simply so that a landlord could put the rent up and get in, a better client, turn it into an Airbnb, make more money with less hassle. And they unanimously voted to put these people out on the street. And my problem with Simon is this disregard for other human beings. And it's all very well to say, well, he's a nice lad and I'm sure there's a good side to him. And as the fella in Greystone said, nobody's perfect. But when this is the real world impact of decisions you're making, it's not acceptable. And it's not acceptable that someone who's capable of that sort of cruelty, that casual, remote cruelty, that's not going to impact on him or his family, be the leader of this country, which is supposed to be a proud republic. I mean, another thing that Simon did was that he strongly threatened our striking nurses. And we know the very, very perilous state that our nurses live in, from week to week, from paycheck to paycheck, performing the most vital service imaginable for the rest of us. And he announced that he was considering imposing financial penalties on our already poor, poor working nurses. And you say, look, what financial penalties are you considering imposing on the vulture funds that are buying up whole estates? What financial penalties are you considering imposing on the banks and the traders? The problem again is that I suppose in a way it's difficult to explain because Simon wouldn't be particularly good at the PR. He wouldn't be someone who has, a sense of leadership about him. I mean, say what you like about Leo. Leo could handle himself anywhere. I mean, I watched with interest Leo on CNN, Leo on Bloomberg at Davos. I mean, he could handle himself perfectly in those situations with the wealthy. I mean, he knew how to do it and he looked the part. I mean, Simon just does not come across as leadership material. He looks like a sort of a young lecturer making his way in a lesser university, coming cycling in the morning with bicycle clips on his trousers.
So Joe, this is not what I've been reading because this is not, I've been led to believe yes. that he is a great the white communicator. Obama. The TikTok Taoiseach.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
There you go.
And, you know, this is like, this stuff is extraordinary. And it is, it kind of, I often feel when they start talking in this way about people, it's like if you went round to your grandmother's house and she sees you like doing something on the phone or just so in awe of, oh my God, you can actually watch something on your phone. Like there's this kind of sense, like, he can log into TikTok on his own. He's in touch with young people. Like, you know, this is the level of it. And it's I remember, and it's funny because I remember covering the leadership contest in Fine Gael in 2017. And I came up with the idea that I would go to all four leadership debates on a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday between Simon Coveney and Leo Varadkar. And I'm telling you, it was the final one was on Sunday in Cork. So maybe it was Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. And the first one was in the Red Cow Inn. And I went out there and I met a Fine Gael grandee outside and I started chatting to him. And this was when it was Leo versus Simon Coveney. And there was a huge crowd coming in from, you know, all around Dublin into the Red Cow. And this guy said to me, he said, you know, he was firmly in the Leo camp and he was like, they love him in here, he said. And he pointed at everyone heading into the Red Cow. And then he gestured out kind of beyond the M50. He waved his hand out beyond there and he said, and they love him out there too. And they never really did. And this was... And again, they're making the same mistake again. They seem to think that these sort of abstract things, the TikTok, T-Shock, all these, and it's just, it's part of the same game. Jesus Christ, last week, stop saying, like they're talked about the earthquake and the political world being turned upside down. And then they start talking about Simon Harris' campaign and they start using the term, the shock and awe. I mean, Simon Harris' campaign.
I doubt very much. I mean, you talk about these sort of guys as leaders in our society, right, of our country. You know, I don't think Leo has ever been in a GAA club. I don't think he would know how to mix with the vast majority of people in the country here. And I think exactly the same with Simon Harris, that he simply wouldn't know how to mix. He wouldn't understand them. He wouldn't have any empathy for them. I mean, the starting point for empathy is, I know you, and I understand the situation that you live in, you know. So, like, I travel the country. I'm very fortunate to be sort of have access to every echelon of society, you know, from the most downtrodden, and sometimes, you know, to that billionaire class who I have spent time with. I know some of the billionaires, you know.
And fair play to you.
I doubt very much whether or not any of those ones would be able to, you know, go into a clubhouse anywhere or go into a wee rural bar anywhere and come in and chat to everybody and get them and understand them. And the big problem with this sort of PR government, which simply allows the market to dictate, okay, takes the profits, but allows it to go around and around and around, so that, you know, now, I mean, buying a house is virtually becoming an impossible dream for people. And I'm going to just read briefly, because this is a taster for our listeners for next week, because I do promise you, it's one of the most electrifying. It's like the sort of the Wolf of Wall Street, the real Wolf of Wall Street, Gary Stevenson. And it's hilarious. It has two episodes with us next Tuesday and Thursday. They are hilarious. They're brilliant. He is an unusual and eccentric and, I mean, completely surprising character, isn't he, Dion?
He is, and, you know, he's amazing.
And he's making hundreds of millions as a 22-year-old, 23-year-old trader. And then he realizes that he's becoming very discontented. He says all these governments are spending more than their income year after year. Their debts are growing. Things keep going this way. Interest rates on the debts will start rising. People will stop lending to them. They'll have to sell their assets. And what about houses? Why is the stock market rising and rising? These assets aren't disappearing. But if the people didn't own them and the governments didn't own them, then who did? And that was it, I think. That was the moment that it hit me. Surrounded by millionaires and multimillionaires and billionaires. It was us. We were the problem. We were the boys who'd be richer than our fathers in a world of children who were destined to be poor and never own a home. We would use the money from our assets to buy the rest of the assets. You'd sell your assets to us to pay your mortgage, to pay your rent, to pay it to us. And it would get worse and worse. It would grow out of control. This wasn't a crisis of confidence. It wasn't the fucking of the banking system. It was inequality. Inequality that will grow and grow and get worse and worse until it dominates and kills the economy and the societies that own it. This isn't temporary. It's fucking terminal. This is a fucking terminal cancer that's growing inside our countries. And he said, you know, I realized then we had been diagnosing a terminal cancer as a series of seasonal colds. And once that's not dealt with, once that's not your urgent priority, starting with housing, and I was delighted to hear Ivana Bacik saying, you know,
it's the civil rights issue of our day.
She said, we're going to build a million houses. We need concrete change that needs to be done now. And when you don't do that, when you keep just managing it as it is, and pretending that everything's okay and you've got a compliant media, okay, that helps you with that, then what happens is people start to go to the dark side. And I don't know if you saw the Ipsos BNA survey that came out this week from February 2024. What is getting voters' attention? Okay. Immigration.
Yeah.
22%. 22% of people, by far, the thing that's occupying people's minds most is immigration. Not your fucking house, you know, not your fucking precarious job, not the horrific inequality that there is in society, you know, not the deregulation of the financial system and what are your kids going to do, you know, not your education. Do you know where education came in the poll? 2%. You know where taxes came? Taxes. The most important thing, taxes. The billionaires must be laughing. The economy, 2%. Budget and spending, 2%. Energy prices. Energy prices, which have gone up over 1,000% in the last decade. 2% of people were interested in that. Employment, 3%. But immigration, 22%.
I know.
And what does that tell us? What does that tell us? You divide the people. Once the people are getting disenchanted and upset about their standard of life and about the hopelessness of their situation, well, then you get the cunts in. You pay the cunts to tell them, look at that fucking transgender. Look at that fucking black man. Look at that bastard Muslim there. Look, look, he's coming in to take your jobs. None of it's evidence-backed. But it starts to flourish. And then people who feel that they're powerless. How do I turn around? How do I reduce my energy bills? Who do I even call? I try to ring someone about my phone bill. It takes 45 minutes and then I eventually have to hang up. I mean, who do I go to once the banks start to foreclose on my mortgage? I can't even afford a lawyer. I can't afford a solicitor. Okay, so that anger then, it's like, hey, you're looking the wrong way, guys. I know you don't know any transgender people and you've never fucking met any of them and they've never bothered you in the slightest. But there's your fucking problem. There they are. You know, and let's burn the bastards. We'll burn their fucking tents down. And we'll stand in Phoenix Park singing songs about murdering politicians. You know, because you'll feel better about it. And it won't get you anywhere. You know, and it'll only create hatred and division and hatefulness. You know, and it'll take away our common humanity. But you'll feel a bit better in the short term. And we'll get fucking rich with our websites. With the contributions you give us. And you know what? If we're lucky, we'll end up like America, a complete fucking shit show where everything we're doing is backed by not just niche media in websites, but the mainstream media. And in that way, Elon Musk can continue to keep his trillions and travel to Mars and pay his workers slave wages, and Apple can continue to pay slave wages to their factory workers in Asia and Ireland. Everything can continue in just exactly the same way as it's always continued, and inequality can get worse and worse and worse because we're not really concerned about education or taxes or the economy or spending or energy prices or crime or employment or the cost of living or inflation or our healthcare system, which came in at 4%. What we're interested in is racism. 22% of people are now distracted to the extent that their priority when it comes to the next election is going to be fucking a bogeyman.
I do one encouraging thing I say. There was an ESRI report that said Ireland still has pretty positive attitudes towards immigration, but I agree with you about that. And I think, and it's funny when you talk about what we talked about with Gary, which is coming out next week, you know, he mentioned, you know, this sense of urgency and this idea that you need to kind of look at this like a big project. And I've been reading a lot about sort of post-war Britain after, you know, 1945 and that sense. And, you know, like the kind of lazy thing about Churchill losing that election was kind of, you know, it was, you know, he said, if this is a blessing, it is very well disguised. But the actually, when you read about it, the amount of the huge sense there was that this was good, that change was needed. That like after the war, like Churchill was getting booed during that election campaign when he went to certain places. And that sense, and you know, you can't sleepwalk into this. And this is your point. Like you can't sleepwalk into a world post 2008, post the pandemic, with all the different areas, ways that have been created to radicalize people, between inequality, between social media, spending so much time online during the pandemic, you know, everybody a conspiracy theorist, no matter what it is. You can't just say you're going to kind of tip along and be, you know, as somebody said about Simon Harris, he's a great communicator because he speaks without hesitation. It needs a lot more than that. And when you talk
about real world solutions to real world problems, you, I mean, imagine in my game, for example, in the law, presented with a difficult case and simply thinking, well, we'll just get through this with a bit of PR, going into court, like where everything's put under the microscope and everything's evidence based and tested and sifted through. I mean, and you know, the thing about your point, which is absolutely right, is that the last Gilded Age, which collapsed, you know, it collapsed sort of during, you know, the period between World War One and World War Two, but then particularly after World War Two, when the world came together and said, like, we can never let this happen again. And part of the reason for this has been structural inequality, a massive part of this. you know, it has caused terrible discontent. So what we're going to do is we're going to start again, and we're going to have very strong welfare states. We're going to have very strong health systems, you know. I mean, and places like the UK and America became the envy of the world and became a signpost for governments all around the world as to how to provide an equal future insofar as is possible for all of their citizens, you know. And when you don't do that, then what you end up with is Irish gobshites, right, in the Phoenix Park singing songs about killing all their political opponents.
I just want to say one thing about Simon Harris, because I think it's relevant to that. People say he's the great communicator idea, and people say, I heard someone saying he can relate to people because he's, you know, I've got a young family. Like the thing that separates
Simon. He can relate to people because he's got a young family.
Yeah, that was somebody said that. Yeah. No, but the point is, the thing that separates Simon Harris from the rest of the country, or from so many people, and I don't think you'd need to have been in a GAA club, or I'm not sure if I've ever been in a GAA club, I'm not running for a Taoiseach. But the thing that separates him is
that
he has always wanted to be Taoiseach. This is the road he has gone down for so long, which makes him just so eccentric in the eyes of so many people. I, like, when I did that, went to all those debates in 2017, and I remember on the Saturday debate in Ballinasloe on a Saturday night, I was there in Ballinasloe for the Fine Gael debate, and it was the night of the FA Cup final was on that day, and I watched that there, and then I was hanging around all these Fine Gael people, and I remember being kind of transfixed by Simon Harris. Because there he was 29 or 30, and he was hanging around with all these Fine Gael grandees. And I felt like Alan Partridge, the time he was on the phone, you know, when he's on the phone to his son, Fernando, and he says, Fernando, it's a Saturday afternoon. You're in bed with a girl. You're wasting your life. You should be out at a fort or a Victorian folly. And I was like looking at him going, here is Harris. He's 29 years old. He's 30 years old. It's Saturday night. He's wasting his life. He's actually at the Victorian folly. He's at a Fine Gael debate when he should be out doing something else. His life is entirely strange because it has been so devoted to getting to where he is today that unless you're in that little world where the game is being played, where you see these things as you talk about shock and awe, which is a military term used to describe the bombing of Baghdad. It's not a term to use to describe Simon Harris's election as Taoiseach. And
no, I mean,
this is the problem. Like, this is why ultimately you sense this sense of they really don't know what's out there. And that's why when the things that are happening that you're talking about, when you're talking about these things that are stoking people's fears, that somebody needs to come along, and we've talked about this before, and actually be a leader and actually say, this is what we stand for.
Truly, truly, they are divorced from reality. And on the other side of the spectrum, you know, the hate movement is likewise divorced from reality. You know, so what you need is a real world project. You know, and the sooner there's a real world political project in place for Ireland, the better. Because, you know, Corbyn's project, which was going to be a real world radical project, was destroyed by the mainstream establishment, the media, all of the anti-Semitic nonsense, all the rest of that stuff. You know, and what we need here is a proper, radical, logical project, you know, that will deal with the real life issues that Irish people face. That's it. I mean, it sounds so simple and logical when you put it that way, but it's been avoided for, you know, well over a generation now, and we're starting to reap the terrible fruits of that.
Thanks everyone for listening. Gary's interview is coming next week, Tuesday and Thursday. Thanks again.
Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and the Greens and all, Democrats, Labour and PPP. Oh, they're the gangsters in the Dáil, but they won't be there for long, because the real Irish people are gonna take your seats. Oh, you run, you can hide. We will hunt you down and bring you back alive. We march you to the gallows in the joy. You care about everybody but your own. You empty Irish to the bone. Now it's time to go home to your new homes in the joy. Ooh, that's where you're gonna die. You're gonna die alone. You shouldn't have came and picked on the Irish moms with brown.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.